Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution. What does the fossil record tell us about intelligent design? And what does intelligent design predict when it comes to junk DNA? Welcome to ID the Future. On today's show, Casey Luskin explores more of intelligent design's testable predictions in a recent talk he gave at the University of Arkansas.
What about a third testable prediction, ID and paleontology? Meyer has written with a number of other pro-ID scientists that intelligent design provides a sufficient causal explanation for the origin of large amounts of information, since we have considerable experience of intelligent agents generating informational configurations of matter. What's he saying? He's saying that intelligent agents can produce large amounts of information. So when we see in the fossil record large amounts of information appearing rapidly, I think that we can infer intelligent agency might have been a cause. A testable prediction of ID is that novel fossil forms will appear suddenly in the fossil record without similar precursors. You will find mass infusions of information into the biosphere rapidly reflected in the abrupt appearance of forms without similar precursors. Now, I want to make this point. ID is not necessarily incompatible with common descent, but I do think that ID would lead us to generally make this expectation. ID simply says that an intelligent agent was involved in the origin of the information in life. That doesn't mean that, you know, we don't necessarily share common ancestor with apes. ID talks about the mechanism of the change and the origin of information in life, not necessarily that organisms don't share common ancestors. But I do think that we would be led to this expectation by ID thinking. So what do we see in the fossil record? Well, this is a paper by Cooper and 40. Basically, in this diagram, the thick black lines represent the actual fossils that we have for the various animal phyla, and the thin black lines represent the predicted existence of fossils by evolutionary theory, but we don't yet have any fossils discovered. The paper is now a little bit outdated, because this was before we found a vertebrate fish in the fossil record in the Cambrian explosion in 1999. So this would now extend vertebrates all the way down. But the bottom line is that, as you can see, the vast majority of the horizontal distance on this graph, which would represent sort of the change between the phyla, is represented by thin black lines, for which we have no fossils apparently, and nearly all of these major animal phyla appear at about the exact same time, about 530 million years ago in the fossil record. And yes, I'm an old earther. You can ask me that question if you want, but I'm always open about that. So I think this is very interesting. And if you don't believe me, a lot of folks have said this is the kind of data that we observe. This is from a paper in Bioessays from last year. It's kind of funny. They're having some fun in this paper. And by the way, Cooper and 40, thoroughgoing evolutionists in this Bioessays paper. The authors are thoroughgoing neo-Darwinian evolutionists. But they say, as far as the fossil record is concerned, as explained on an intelligent design t-shirt, fact, 40 phyla complex animals suddenly appear in the fossil record. No forerunners, no transitional forms leading to them. A major mystery, a challenge. The theory of evolution exploded again. IDofcourse.com. I don't know who makes that site, and I have no idea who's behind it, but apparently that's on that website. They go on to then say, although we would dispute the numbers, aside from the last line, there's not much here that we would disagree with. Indeed, many of Darwin's contemporaries share these sentiments, and we would assume if Victorian fashion dictated, they would have worn the same t-shirt with pride. So, very interesting. This is the data that we find in the fossil record. A biology textbook from a few years ago says, most of the animal phyla that are represented in the fossil record first appear fully formed in the Cambrian some 550 million years ago. The fossil record is therefore of no help with respect to the origin and early diversification of the various animal phyla. And I understand, I mean, we can talk about various proposed examples of transitional forms. Some are more solid than others, but the bottom line is that the rule in the fossil record tends to be the abrupt appearance of new species, and it's the rarity that we find a plausible candidate for a transitional form. And I'm happy, if you guys want to talk about any of those, let's talk about them, and maybe there are some good ones out there. Many of the examples that I've heard tend up really raising some major questions about the evolutionary story when you look at them closely. So I'm not saying that there's no examples of transitional forms out there. There are some plausible ones, perhaps, but let's talk about them if you want. But the rule in the fossil record tends to be this. Many species remain virtually unchanged for millions of years, then suddenly disappear to be replaced by quite different but related form. Moreover, most major groups of animals appear abruptly in the fossil record, fully formed, with no fossils yet discovered that form a transition from their parent group. So for those of us who are going to say, well, this abrupt appearance only applies to, say, organisms at the species level, that's not what these textbooks are saying. They're saying that it's the major groups. It's the animal phyla and other major groups that have this kind of a pattern. And we also see it as well very often at the species level. There's other explosions, not just the Cameron explosion. There's a marine Mesozoic explosion. There's a, they call it the big bloom of angiosperms, of flowering plants. There's a mammalian radiation. There's also a bird explosion just prior to the KT boundary. And even some anthropologists have used the term a Big Bang theory of human evolution to describe the origin of our genus Homo. So I think that we find this pattern in the fossil record very common, that we see abrupt appearance of new biological forms without similar precursors, and that is exactly what you'd expect if there was a mass infusion of information in the biosphere, and there's only one cause that I'm aware of that can do that, and that would be intelligence. Let's do one last testable prediction. This is dealing with the topic of junk DNA. A couple years ago, Jonathan Wells said, since non-coding regions do not produce proteins, Darwinian biologists have been dismissing them for decades as random evolutionary noise or junk DNA. From an ID perspective, however, it is extremely unlikely that an organism would expend its resources on preserving and transmitting so much junk. Why is that? Well, it's really simple. We observe that intelligent agents, they tend to produce things that are functional. Intelligent agents produce things for a reason. And so if a structure has absolutely no purpose, no function at all, I would not expect it to arrive at that state as a result of intelligent design. I would expect that Darwinian evolution or some non-intelligent process might have caused it to arrive at that state. So this is, I think, a nice, falsifiable, testable prediction that can potentially falsify ID. If you find a structure that truly has no function, then ID was not involved in that structure arriving at that functionless state. And ID proponents, by the way, have been making this prediction since long before 2004, going all the way back to the early 1990s. So the prediction here is that the cell will tend to contain less functionless junk, and biology will tend not to contain functionless parts. Just a quick background on junk DNA. In our DNA, there is DNA that codes for proteins. That is called coding DNA. Now, for many years, biologists looked at the DNA that does not code for protein, which makes up perhaps as much as 97% of our DNA, and they thought that, well, this does nothing. So most of this is, maybe not all of it, but a lot of it, a huge proportion. I've heard people say well upwards of 50, 60% of it is the result of millions of years of random evolutionary mutations scrambling our DNA, duplicating genes, which then become subfunctionalized or they lose their function. Our genome is littered, supposedly, with millions of years worth of just the accumulation of junk. And they would say this is a prediction of Darwinism, whereas ID would not predict this. And I would agree with them that ID would not predict that the cell would be full of junk DNA. And by the way, the discovery of function for junk DNA does not falsify evolution. They can accommodate that. But this junk DNA paradigm within the Darwinian community, unfortunately, hindered the progress of science to actually study function for this junk DNA. So an article in the journal Science a few years ago said, the term junk DNA for many years repelled mainstream researchers from studying non-coding DNA. Who except a small number of genomic clochards would like to dig through genomic garbage? However, in science, as in normal life, there are some clocharts who, at the risk of being ridiculed, explore unpopular territories. Now, more and more biologists regard repetitive elements as a genomic treasure. It was not because of Darwinism. The scientists who were seeking function for junk DNA were really the ones bucking the trend, and they faced a lot of pushback. As a matter of fact, one of these scientists, John Maddock, said that in an article in Scientific American in 2003, that evolutionary biology's conclusion that things like introns, a type of DNA within gene-coding DNA that doesn't code for the actual protein, that our failure to recognize the function of introns might well go down as one of the biggest mistakes in the history of molecular biology. And it's the direct result of evolutionary assumptions. Now, ID proponents have said, you know what? Let's take a wait-and-see approach. Let's not conclude that just because we don't know what this DNA is doing, that therefore it has no function. This is evidence against ID and for Darwinian evolution. And the reality is that in the last few years, the junk DNA paradigm has been virtually completely overturned. It's now pretty widely accepted that the vast majority of our DNA does have a function. This is a paper from Richard Sternberg, a pro-ID evolutionary scientist, wrote a peer-reviewed paper in the Annals of New York Academy of Sciences. So, you know, the claim that ID proponents don't address these issues in peer-reviewed papers is not true, and we'll talk about that some more. He writes that the selfish junk DNA narrative and other allied frameworks must join the other icons of neo-Darwinian evolutionary theory that, despite their variance with the empirical evidence, nevertheless persist in the literature. And he lists dozens of functions for repetitive and once-thought junk DNA in this paper. And since 2002, we have found far more functions, even functions for things like pseudogenes. Final example. Anyone know what this is? That's an appendix. I would say that coming out of this prediction of ID is the view that supposedly vestigial and functionless organs would turn out to have a function. I mean, it's been long known that the appendix has a function, but Evolutionists have used it for years as an alleged example of our descent from quadruped ancestors. They would claim that the appendix is not useful. It really doesn't have a function. It's just a vestigial remnant, and it's evidence against ID. You know, why would a designer put a functionless organ like the appendix into our bodies? Well, it turns out the appendix is not functionless. This article from Yahoo News a few months back said it nicely. The appendix has long been thought of as nothing more than a worthless evolutionary artifact, good for nothing, save a potentially lethal case of inflammation. Now researchers suggest the appendix is a lot more than a useless remnant. In a way, the idea that the appendix is an organ whose time has passed has itself become a concept whose time is over. Maybe it's time to correct the textbooks. Many biology texts today still refer to the appendix as a vestigial organ, which it's not. So what's the basis of ID, just to recap here? First, we have the discovery of biochemical language and irreducibly complex molecular machines. And by the way, I mean, I think this is the one of the most compelling arguments for design. In our experience, where does language, where do machines come from? There's only one known source of language in machines, and that's an intelligent cause. But what forms the basis of life? An encoded biochemical language and machines. And I think that this is a very strongly positive argument for design that is quite compelling in my view. The discovery of digital information and information processing systems in the cell, discovery of the fine-tuning of the laws and constants of physics, and I would say also I'll add in some of the other predictions that I talked about, but the key part here is that the inferences to design are based upon our knowledge of the cause and effect structure of the world. It's based upon a scientific argument, a scientific method. So you can disagree with the conclusions of ID, and that's fine, and I welcome that, and maybe we can talk about some of that, but I don't think you can reasonably claim that this is an argument based upon religion, faith, or divine revelation. I have not referred to religion or faith or divine revelation in this argument at all. It's an empirically based argument based upon the scientific data. So it's fine if you want to disagree with ID, but don't claim, I mean, I don't know how you're going to claim my argument is based upon religion, faith, or divine revelation, and that's because it's not.
Tune in next time for more of ID's testable predictions from Casey Luskin at www.idthefuture.com. I'm Annika Smith with the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2010. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.